Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Kim Show,
a smooth talk of the town.
Cool. We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and if you don't recognize that intro, greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains, I borrowed that from an intro that Rush Limbaugh likes to use when he's playing his pompous radio talk show guy. But I want to zero in here in the last half hour on another couple of issues where I think it's pretty obvious, not to conservatives, but it's pretty obvious if you study history, why conservatives are on the losing side of these issues. And by losing side, I don't mean conservatives are going to disappear. You always want counterweights on both sides. I don't want the liberals to have complete power in this country, but I don't want the conservatives to either. America's middle of the road. And those of you that listen to my show regularly know that I believe that it's the 20% of the people on the far right and the 20% on the far left that are ruining this country for the rest of us. You know, you need the people to push the envelope on the far right and the far left, but you cannot afford to put them in charge. And what we've done in the last few years is we've ceded the airwaves to them. And every time I hear Ann Coulter being interviewed on TV as though she were some kind of an expert on this country, it just amazes me. Or Michelle Melkin interviewed, or Bill O'Reilly treated as though he's got some understanding of what's going on. It's just very strange. So I don't want the far left to be in charge. What I'd like to see is just a little more balance. And right now, the airwaves are just infected with this juvenile point of view, this childish point of view. And what I mean by that in terms of intellectual development is this black and white thinking. As I said before the break, Rush Limbaugh talks as though we must win this war, and the Democrats are invested in defeat, and the only answer is to win, and we will win, and we can win. What does win mean? He never really says. Well, defeat the Islamo-fascist terrorists. Yeah. And when do you think they'll dry up? When do you think there'll be no more of them? Because look what happens in the rest of the Middle East. Let's take the Israeli-Palestinian problem. Every time a Palestinian kills an Israeli or more than one Israeli, and it doesn't happen that often, but it does happen, the opinions harden on the Israeli side. And every time the Israelis kill a Palestinian, which happens a little more often than Israelis getting killed, opinions harden on the Palestinian side. You know, you think we have trouble bringing the Republicans and Democrats together? Imagine if we were killing each other. It would be impossible. But the difference in terms of the losing side here to me is that the black and white thinking that you get particularly from the far right, and I think you get more of it from the far right than the far left. The far left is guilty of some of the same sins as the far right. That's the nature of being 20 percenters. When you are out on the extremes, you have absolute beliefs. You think you're right. You can't really see the other side's point of view, because it's so far away from yours that you actually attribute to them being insane or being of having bad motives, which is what happens on the far right. And let's go back to the general Betrayus ad. MoveOn.org came out with this ad about a month ago, and it was ill-conceived, and it's a mistake to attack a general for a number of reasons. Strategically, it's a mistake, but here's a person trying to do the best they can. Now, the reason MoveOn attacked him was that Bush was hiding behind him, but their mistake was tactical. Go after Bush for hiding behind him. Don't go after the general who's trying to do a job. But what's interesting is that the big flap over the General Betrayus ad in the New York Times was that, oh, you can't attack a sitting general who's only trying to do his best. Republicans and conservatives didn't want to talk about the war, and MoveOn.org gave them an out. Because then they could just attack MoveOn.org. So, an interesting distraction, but hardly the point. Just like the interesting distraction we're dealing with right now. Rush Limbaugh's in the news and in the hot seat the last few days. You may or may not know about this. You'd have to pay attention to the web and the right-wing talk show hosts to hear about this, probably. But basically, the far left is attacking Limbaugh the same way the far right, I shouldn't say far, in both cases, the right and the left are attacking. First, the right attacked the left because they dared to question General Petraeus's motives. Now, if you read into it carefully, you know that General Petraeus agreed to sign up for George Bush's surge. Everybody likes to talk about this as though this is General Petraeus's idea, the surge. No, this is not his strategy. Bush came up with the surge, and then he searched until he found a general that would sign up for it. And Petraeus said, I'll do it for you. And so Bush got rid of a couple of other generals and went to Petraeus, gave him his 4-star, and put him in charge. But this is George Bush's surge. And so MoveOn.org should have gone after Bush. That was their biggest mistake. But what's interesting now is that Rush Limbaugh has put his foot in his mouth again. And, you know, I don't want to put too much stock in this because Rush Limbaugh puts his foot in his mouth all the time. But basically, if you haven't heard, he referred to phony soldiers. So he basically said that people that active duty soldiers that criticize the war are phony soldiers. Now, he's backtracked and he's claimed that's not what he said, but it's what he said. I'll read you the quote. Limbaugh said, it's not possible intellectually to follow these people, meaning the people on the left, who say we should pull out of Iraq, we should keep the troops safe, we got to bring the troops home. Then the caller says, quote, no, it's not. And what's really funny is they never talk to real soldiers. They like to put these soldiers that come up out of the blue and talk to the media. Limbaugh, the phony soldiers. Caller two, the phony soldiers. If you talk to a real soldier, they're proud to serve. They want to be over in Iraq. They understand their sacrifice and they're willing to sacrifice for the country. But see, this is the black and white thinking. This soldier who's this caller said that they were a soldier and had fought 2 tours in Iraq. But if you don't think there's dissent in the rank and file who are serving in Iraq, you're not being realistic. Some polls suggest that a majority of Americans serving in uniform think it's a mistake to be there and don't quite know what the advantage is of staying. But that doesn't mean they're not willing to serve. This caller to Limbaugh said, if you talk to a real soldier, they are proud to serve. They're all proud to serve. The 7 soldiers that wrote the op-ed in the New York Times a couple of months ago are proud to serve. Okay? They wrote an editorial in which they laid out the case that it was a mistake to be there. But they also said they'll do their duty. And by the way, 2 of them have been killed just in the last month doing their duty. But these 7 people who served in the 82nd Airborne active duty wrote this editorial in August in the New York Times. Here's just a small quote from it. Quote, in the end, we need to recognize that our presence may have released Iraqis from the grip of a tyrant, but that it's also robbed them of their self-respect. They will soon realize that the best way to regain dignity is to call us what we are, an army of occupation, and force our withdrawal. Until that happens, it would be prudent for us to increasingly let Iraqis take center stage in all matters, to come up with a nuanced policy in which we assist them from the margins, but let them resolve their differences as they see fit. This suggestion is not meant to be defeatist, but to highlight our pursuit of incompatible policies to absurd ends without recognizing the incongruities. We need not talk about our morale. As committed soldiers, we will see this mission through. That's the seven soldiers on active duty with the 82nd Airborne that wrote the anti-war piece in the New York Times back in August. And what Limbaugh is in hot water for right now, and he's protesting and claiming he didn't say it or didn't mean it, is that the caller said that what's really funny is they never talk to real soldiers. They like to put these soldiers that come up out of the blue and talk to the media. The phony soldiers. Yeah, the phony soldiers. If you talk to a real soldier, they're proud to serve. They want to be over in Iraq. I got to tell you, if you took a vote, the majority of soldiers would not want to be there. They're willing to serve. They're willing to do their duty. They're not going to shrink from it. Everybody gets that. But this idea that if you protest the war, you're a phony soldier, that's crazy. I know people who are on active duty that wouldn't talk about it on a radio show like this, but they shake their heads when they see the current policy and say, you know, it doesn't make sense. Not just because some of their friends have been killed over there, but just because as a citizen that has the right to vote, they're thinking, what the heck are we doing? So the black and white thinking that Limbaugh and the rest of the holy BS crowd goes through is that, well, if you say we can't win, if Harry Reid says the war is lost, then the question is, who lost it? We must have lost. No. You know, whether it was Korea or Vietnam, just because you don't win doesn't mean you lose. And that's what these guys want to say. That's the black and white thinking. Well, if you're saying we can't win, then we must lose. No, there's such a thing as a stalemate. You know, Korea was a stalemate. Vietnam, you could say it was a stalemate. In the end, Nixon really just didn't want to be saddled with the loss himself. He stuck forward with the loss. But we waited an extra 4 years there to get peace with honor. But what's interesting about the Limbaugh's comments is that he's claiming that he didn't say what he said. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the role of Media Matters in all of this. This is the site, the website that monitors all these radio and television shows. When they catch them saying something outrageous that sounds good when you're feeding red meat to the base on radio, but when you put it in black and white, it looks bad. And they quote it extensively. They have both the text and the audio on this website. And everybody from Bill O'Reilly to Rush Limbaugh to, I was listening to Mark Levin on the way in on the radio, and they're all saying what a vile, disreputable website Media Matters is and how they take things out of context. Of course they don't. They print paragraph after paragraph of stuff in context. They play the entire audio clip. But what these guys don't like doing is having their words thrown back to them. Their idea of out of context is, you need to understand, I'm doing 3 hours a day on the radio, and I'm feeding red meat to the base, and I get myself worked up, and I say a lot of things that may sound silly if you see them in isolation, but I'm just talking my audience into getting mad at Democrats and liberals. So anything you take off of my show is taking it out of its context. I'm talking to some people who are rabid believers, and they're nodding along with me. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk about the role Media Matters plays in all of this, because I kind of like it. So let me leave you here with Right Wing Talk Show Host featuring John Clark.
There's a man who leads a life of anger. Every day he gets a little stranger. With every word he speaks, he yells, he whines, he shrieks. Odds are he won't understand tomorrow. Right wing talks. show host, ignorant talk show host. They've given you a time slot and taken away your brain. There's a group who spend their time complaining. It's bad enough they think that's entertaining. But their lenses are so skewed that all you can conclude, they're desperate for some IQ they can borrow. A rigid talk show host, batty talk show host, we're giving you a platform. It's time you were diagnosed. Right-wing talk show host, ignorant talk show host. They've given you a time slot and taken away your brain. Where the easy answers you may find, simple thoughts they come from simple minds. So notice who they blame and examine all their claims. Odds are you'll see through all their illogic. Right-wing talk show host, pompous talk show host, we've given you a forum, but you're still as deaf as a post. Talk show host.
Yes, we are back on the Andy Finn Show, and that's in honor of Rush Limbaugh and the whole holy BS crowd, Hannity, O'Reilly, Limbaugh, Ingram, and the BS is Bortz and Savage, a fine crew of crazy, crazy people that they mean well, they just don't have the intellectual horsepower required to think certain issues through. And let's talk about that for another minute. When I say that the way this is happening, the way this is going down, is that the conservative point of view is going to lose ground over time, what I mean is that the country moves forward and the process of intellectual and ethical development in both individual human beings and in society is against them. Let me just take a piece of this equation. So you got to pay attention here. This gets slightly complex. Yes, I'm talking to you out there. So let's just consider traditionalism, modernism, and postmodernism, right? Three kind of eras. And what I mean by that is traditionalism is someone or a time in our past when traditional thinking dominated. That is, your main basis for authority and knowledge comes out of traditional sources. Perhaps the government, tradition and authority, authoritative sources, the government, wise men or women, books that give you the answers to things, whether it's the Constitution or it's the Bible. And so traditional thinking, someone who's a traditionalist, their primary source of knowledge, the thing they would credit with the best place to get knowledge, would be, that'd be their dominant approach, and they would look to, many people look to the Bible, but many people would look to just the traditions that have been passed down. That's traditionalism. Modernism began with the rise of science and with the Age of Enlightenment. And so the Copernican revolution and the scientific revolution that followed and all the discoveries said, you know, the church said that it knew how we got to be here, Garden of Eden and all, in the fall when man ate from the tree of knowledge. But it turns out that science, as defined by Copernicus, Galileo, Newton, Einstein, can actually answer questions about the physical world, the physical universe, better than the church can. Therefore, science rose, and the church didn't become much of an authority anymore on the empirical world, on the physical universe. Well, that was the rise of modernism, and modernism has been ascendant for 200 or 300 years. Now, postmodernism has come along, and it scares some people. It scares Sean Hannity something fierce. Every time somebody wants to say, you know, you got to look at the gray areas of life, Hannity goes into these rants about, you're talking about relativism. Sean, don't be afraid of relativism. It won't bite you. Now, if you don't understand it, it can scare you. So let me explain relativism. So the science was king from the time it rose until the last 30 years. And everyone assumed that the scientific method, which gave us all these great things and spin-offs like the field of engineering and our ability to build everything from roads and bridges and houses to computers and the internet, we said, science is the answer. Science has the answers. And science is the absolute authority. Postmodernism came along and said, not so fast. Everything comes from a certain perspective, so context is important. And even scientists are seeing things from their own context. And within the field of science, we discovered things like Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, that you can't know both the energy and the position of an electron and be absolutely certain of it, that context was important, and that there's any number of things in science now that science realizes that your perspective matters. Time is not a constant. We thought it was, and then Einstein proved that the faster you're traveling, the slower time moves at very great speeds. So slowly, science has come around to the idea, although it still holds on to the notion that it has the proper view of the universe. Postmodernism says, you know, in the same way that science dethroned religion and said, you know, you don't have all the answers, postmodernism dethrones science and says it doesn't have all the answers. And you don't have to fear postmodernism. The problem that people like Sean Hannity have is that they assume that postmodernism and relativism means that there are no standards and there's no way to judge behavior, and therefore being a murderer is as good as being an honest, law-abiding citizen, and being lawless is as good as following law. No, that's not what relativism says at all. What relativism says is that you can't appeal a priori to some particular standard or document and say, as long as you understand, I've set the following rules, or someone else has set the following rules, and as long as you accept those as truth, now we can have a conversation about life and how we should live it. Postmodernism says, no, you don't get to set a priori certain standards and claim that you've got the truth. Let's work out the truth together. And so you work out laws together, and you work out your view of the universe and the world together. But I like to compare this intellectual journey to getting out on a sailboat. And for somebody like Sean Hannity, who's scared to sail out in the open oceans, he ought to stay moored in port, because there won't be many waves and the sea will be relatively calm. The view won't change and he won't have very much fun, but he won't be in constant fear. But for those of us who like the adventure, we should pull up anchors, don't assume we have absolutes about how the world works, and then set our sails and mark a course. That view is interesting, things change. There are challenges. The sea can get rough. You have to be able to trim your sails. You have to be able to steer your boat. You have to be able to avoid the pitfalls. But as long as you can do that intellectually, it's a wonderful journey. But if you're locked in to a narrow point of view and you have to have anchors, like, I already know this was right, that is right, and this much is right, and now we can have a conversation, then you and Sean Hannity should stay in port and let the rest of us sail the ocean. That's going to do it for this edition of the Andy Finn Show. We're going to be back next week on the 8th of October with another hour. Until then, you can read my blog writings, my editorials at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us. And you can also hear these recordings there. Until next week, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.